think this is a story that has very much gripped the nation in the last couple of days. I want to pay tribute to the RT documentary on One Team for once again putting together a really fascinating programme that gives us further insight into our country and into our past, a true example of public service broadcasting, and I want to recognise that here. I think it was deeply moving. It was almost unbelievable, except that those of us who did grow up in Ireland in the 80s can believe how it was true.
What culminated with Taoiseach Leo Varadkar in the Dáil on Tuesday began the previous Saturday on Radio 1 at 2.
Welcome to the documentary on 1. This afternoon,
it was a documentary with one powerful image after another. For example, the picture of a young Garda walking the beat in Dublin, looking at babies and pining.
When I'd see little babies in buggies, I'd automatically think of David. Every day, I thought of him.
The Garda was Magella Moynihan, and she told her story in the documentary on One, The Case of Magella Moynihan. Now, the word case usually implies a suspicion of an illicit act, which is what Magella was charged with.
You, being a female member of An Garda Síochána, did, on or about the 31st of May 1984, give birth to a child outside wedlock at Galway Regional Hospital, Galway, County Galway.
Outside wedlock is the significant phrase here, because while Magella was described as an exemplary guard by her immediate superiors,
she is honest, dependable and willing. I am particularly impressed by her devotion to duty while pregnant.
Garda authorities were obsessed with her, and they made their need to punish her quite public, as one of her former colleagues, Tom McGowan, remembered.
It was very obvious that there was something going on at a higher level, because when we'd cross units, we'd parade at 6 o'clock, and then more frequently than not, an inspector would come in and call Magella out, and then Magella would probably be there for an hour and a half. And whatever went on would obviously be upsetting Magella, and Magella would come back out on the beat. So, you know, it was a case of deliberately targeting her, I believe, anyway.
The Garda authorities suspected, perhaps, that they had an easy target in Magella. She was enthusiastic and competent, but vulnerable. After all, she grew up in an orphanage where she was relentlessly targeted and beaten by a cruel nun who worked there. So, having given birth to a baby boy in 1984, Magella then came under pressure to give him up for adoption.
The next day I went into the hospital and he was in the nursery. And I asked the nurse, could I hold him? And she said no. And I remember staring into the nursery, just wanting to grab him and run. I didn't know where I was going to run. That pain is still like it was yesterday. It was the worst day of my life.
And then on top of that, her work brought more pressure to bear on her.
How did I get pregnant? Where did I get pregnant? Was he the first man I ever had sex with?
Not only did Magella have to go through her own disciplinary process, the father of the child was also a guard, and he was brought through proceedings too. Magella was called as a witness in these, but felt treated as if she was the one on trial.
Did you have sexual intercourse with any other person from the time you had sexual intercourse with...
No. I don't understand why they felt that they had a right to ask me about anything of my past. It had nothing to do with me getting pregnant.
Did you not feel that you would become pregnant as a result of having sexual relations with...
He used contraceptives.
And how did this pregnancy occur if contraceptives were used?
He did not use them the night I got pregnant.
Was that at your suggestion?
No.
I often wonder what they thought was going to be the outcome of something so ferocious. How that they could even comprehend to put a 22-year-old vulnerable person who did nothing wrong, that they betrayed, I'd done so much wrong, into a room full of men and to tear me apart like they did.
It was decided that the father of Magella's child would be fined £90 for his conduct.
I just feel the total injustice of a man being fined £90 and me being charged with giving birth with a child.
Of course, Magella's story doesn't end with her caution for bearing a child in the 1980s, and the full documentary, The Case of Magella Moynihan, can be heard on the Documentary on One webpage or through the Doc on One smartphone app.
Through the houses saying, are you pregnant? Are you pregnant?
A Magella story ran throughout the week on Radio 1, and at one point on Liveline, it was interrupted by another story about someone vulnerable who had been targeted for bullying.
Mm-hmm. Had a mother that was one in a million, jokes.
Okay, Christine, I'm gonna ask you to hold with me and bear with me. Fergal Keane is in the court. Fergal, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. We've just had a verdict in the last couple of minutes, and both boys, both A and B, have been found guilty of the murder of Anna Creasure. Now, all the verdicts that came after maybe 15 hours of jury deliberations, and the jury said today that they were all unanimous verdicts.
And Fergal, any reaction from the boys or indeed their families?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, everybody was in tears. Now, boy A was taken out into a consultation room with his family and his lawyers. He was in tears. His mother was in tears. They were hugging. The Gardaí stood outside the consultation room. Boy B, he hugged his mother. He also, for the first time, really showed emotion in the case. And his father appeared quite angry. He slammed one of the seats and walked out of the court, came back again, and then started speaking to the Gardaí quite loudly before he left. And boy B was then taken off into custody out through the side of the court. And Anna Creasure's family were also in tears.
Yeah, and the two boys are now the youngest people in the history of the state to be convicted of murder.
Okay, and it was shocking and surprising, even when they held up their clothes, the clothes they wore on the day, like Boy D had size 6 shoes, children clothes really, because they were only 13 at the time of the murder, and they're now 14. She was maybe 6 months older than them, also a child, and her mother gave some very strong evidence in the court. She spoke about how she had been bullied endlessly and relentlessly in school. She was alone and she was kicked out. Her mother, in fact, took the bullying so seriously that she took her phone and iPad every night, and she had to give her passwords to check her electronic devices for evidence of bullying. She complained to the school about bullying. She wasn't happy, she said, with what the school had done or lack of what the school had done. And it went on from there, the allegations that she had been picked out because she was different.
Fergal Keane from Liveline. Tenebrae facte sunt, there was darkness. From Vespertine with Ellen Cranitch on Lyric FM.
Playback on RTE Radio 1.
The compelling combination of sport and emotion was everywhere this week. On Miscellany 50, on The Marty Squad on Radio 1, and on The Breakfast Show with Will Leahy on RTE Gold. Will was looking back 25 years to the Irish soccer team in Giant Stadium and Ray Houghton's goal against Italy.
Galvin pulling it across. A missed kick by Sansom. In goes Aldridge. And Houghton! 1-0! And Ray Houghton has got the breakthrough!
Then Will spoke to Maureen Keenan about that night.
How are you, Maureen?
Hi, Will. How are you?
You're in Tralee.
I am.
Tell everybody where you are.
She was talking to him, having dropped her child off to school. On the night of the Ireland-Italy match, she was only 17 and had just finished the Leaving Cert and was well ready for a night out.
Myself and my two friends headed down to Spiral's nightclub, the place where many, many relationships were started, and went in for the big match. They had a big screen on in front of the dance floor, so we thought we were, you know, it. Cool dudes going down to watch the game with our T-shirts on, our scarves around our necks and everything.
So what happened next?
Well, as we know, Ray Houghton scored. Yeah. And literally, as he scored at 11 minutes past nine, I met my husband.
Right, so how did that happen?
We were all hopping around the place. And, of course, the usual gang of lads come over and gave each other a big hug. And that was it, really. I'm not going to say, well, maybe it was love at first sight, I'm not sure. But we were practically inseparable since.
So if Ray Houghton hadn't scored that goal, The child you just dropped to school to go on the school tour may not exist.
Well, potentially.
Right. So everybody went mad. Everybody was hugging and kissing each other. We just put the ball in the Italian net and you happened to hug the man who you would go on to marry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So flash forward then 25 years later.
Flash forward 25 years later, and actually about 6 or 7 weeks ago, we were at the opening. It was a dedication of a soccer pitch in Castle Island to the late Georgie Callaghan. And we decided to go out. There was a few Irish legends going to be there. And lo and behold, Ray Houghton walks into the pitch.
Right.
And needless to say, Paul McGrath had passed us, got our photos with him, a couple of other guys. Wasn't particularly sure who they were, to be honest with you. But Ray Houghton came in and I said, Ray, I've been waiting 25 years to tell you this. And I was probably more excited at that moment than I had been in a long time, because I've always wanted to say to him. Now, unfortunately, when I did meet him, I just told him it was all his fault.
Right.
But he took great credit in being, I suppose, responsible for the fact that there were now three children following me around the place.
And so I take it every time you see that gold flash up on Reading in the Years, that memory comes into your head.
Oh, goosebumps. Yeah, goosebumps. And even though we're married now nearly 12 years, we would still see the 18th of June as being our anniversary.
Maureen Keenan with Will Leahy on RTE Gold Breakfast. One of the most moving interviews of the week, and I mean that in both senses of the word, took place at the end of a hurling game. It was between Cork and Clare. Clare won, but are out of the championship regardless. Now, if you recall from last week's playback, the abuse the Clare team got on social media for their performance was awful. So on Sunday, Brenda Donoghue did a walking interview with one of the Clare players as he left the pitch.
Peter Duggan, number 10 for Clare. You scored some amazing points. Congratulations on the win, first of all.
Yeah, look, it's very, very hard to take when when we don't get through. But look, at least we salvage a little bit of dignity with ourselves. We're very disappointed. We got an awful hard time from everyone over the last 2 weeks, which I don't think is really deserved, considering the amount of effort and energy we put into it. No one ever goes out to play a bad game, and unfortunately, these things just happen. And look, all we wanted to do was go out and concentrate on our own performance today. And look, I'm sure anyone that was there at the game saw the heart and courage that we did show in that game. And look, that's about all I can say. I'm absolutely heartbroken not to be true after doing that. But look, these things happen. It's hurling.
What have you got to say to the fans today who really got behind you?
Being honest, it was brilliant to see so many still turn out, because, being honest, I didn't think there was going to be that much of a crowd. We went out for the minor game in the first half, and before the game, seeing the crowd, it was a huge lift to us. And it's one thing we always play to the fans, and in fairness, hearing them roar any time we get a score is just a huge lift, and just thanks for anyone that showed up today.
Brenda Donoghue with Clare's Peter Duggan on the Marty squad on Sunday. In the same programme, Roscommon's victory in the football was marked by the Sport Laureate of Roscommon, Paddy Joe Burke.
Barber in Roscommon Town and one of the greatest fans and supporters I know. How do you feel, Paddy Joe?
Marty, I feel absolutely brilliant. And can I just say to all the Roscommon fans, from Shannonbridge to Rigna, from Ballinlough to Ballyleague, and the Rossies all over the world, we have great news for you. JJ Nestor is coming home among the Rossies tonight. JJ Nestor is coming back to Midtown Roscommon. The Rossies went to Winter Castlebar, took on the National League champions, Mayo, great team, there's no need to say any more. Galway, fantastic county, they're third on the roll of honour with All-Ireland titles, and for the Roscommons to come up and beat Galway and Pearse Stadium today, it's a proud day. And wherever you are around the world, will you just have a big cup of coffee tonight if you're a Rossi? Drink it slow and say welcome to JJ Nestor. We love having him in County Roscommon. The Nestor Cup is coming home, because why? We're the Connacht champions, the Rossies, the Rossies, the Rossies.
Paddy Joe Burke with Marty Morrissey. And then, did you hear Tommy Sands on Miscellany 50?
And that, you knob-faced nur, he shouted.
He told about the time his father took a knife to the radio.
His general target on that occasion was Athlone, the headquarters of Ireland's national radio station, and Micheál O'Hare, the sports commentator in particular. Take that, ye can ye, he roared.
He wrote a piece about his father losing his temper with the old wet battery wireless during a GAA game featuring his native County Down.
He's placing the ball on the 14-yard line. This could be the most important kick of his life, the most important kick in the life of the County Down. He's stepping back now. The crowd are holding their breath. Here he comes. There was a deathly silence. We stopped breathing, waiting for the kick. We waited and waited.
waited. But Paddy Doherty never got the ball kicked in our house. Our wireless had stopped breathing too. The wet battery had run out. It needed to be charged again, but not in the manner that it was being charged, battered, butted and knifed by my father this moment. You dirty, rotten, treacherous, two-faced son of a bitch's ghost of an excuse for a wireless, he roared, with lefts and rights to AFN Frankfurt and the BBC Home Service. If you're playing that pop rubbish on Luxembourg, you wouldn't break down a howl, wouldn't you not? As it happened, Paddy Doherty scored that penalty, and Down had qualified to meet the mighty Kingdom of Kerry in their first ever All-Ireland final. But we wouldn't know that until the next morning, when Jack Grant would come round in Gorman's new mobile grocery shop with the Irish Press.
Tommy Sands from Miscellany 50. This is from Country Time.
Say you're heading out to California. You've heard the grapes are falling from the vine. I was hoping you might have. But I don't believe you will, so never mind. I was talking to a man down at Genesco, and he thought they might be hiring any time. I'm so tired of going any way the wind blows, and I thought that me and you, but never mind.
Nancy Griffith from Country Time with Brian Lally on Saturday night on Radio 1. On Tuesday night, John Creedon had a little bit of Irish, sort of, on his show. Quick reminder, the phrase "boola bus" means clapping hands.
Thanks, Kevin, for the photograph. It's a nice one, actually. It comes from Fiji, and he lets me know that boola is the Fijian for hello. So they have a bus company out there called Boola Bus. Indeed, indeed, indeed. That calls for a round of applause, but he sends me a photograph. We've retweeted it. If you want to have a look at the bus with the thatched roof, the Boola bus from Fiji, which is not a hurling stronghold, as you know, but we won't hold that against them.
John Creedon from Tuesday night.
Michaela, Michael?
Aye. Buongiorno, Jennifer.
Buongiorno, come and stay.
And Jennifer Zamprelli had a bit of Irish on her show on 2FM.
And what Irish words do you know?
I know Conasatotu, but good. Most importantly, I know Tomen Grolot.
Very good. What's that mean?
I love you.
Oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew that.
Mangled Irish in an Italian accent still sounds romantic. From Jennifer Zamprelli on 2FM.
Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Jen. Breaking news, big exclusive.
And then she had Sharon Mannion on. Yeah. And Sharon had breaking news for Jennifer. But first, they got talking about taxis.
Got a taxi in.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't stop talking. He wouldn't stop talking.
Okay.
And it's a major, major thing. How to communicate that I can't do that in the mornings.
Do you really need to talk about that? Can you not give me the breaking news
first?
I'll
give you the breaking news in a minute now. It's very good though. You're going to want to hang on for that.
Okay.
So I figured out that if you pretend you can't hear, that's kind of it.
So you pretend you're a deaf person.
Well, not deaf, but just like slightly impaired.
Do you know what I do, which is a great way for them not to talk to you, especially if they're owl lads, because they can't handle if you start taking selfies of yourself.
Oh, that's be like, so you.
Oh,
that'd be
young
so
ones.
So you.
Sometimes I do an Insta video.
Oh, Jen. Oh, God, you're
but
sitting.
That's they won't talk to you. They won't talk to you, I swear to God.
I'm sticking with my deaf thing. I think it's just, it's not even that. It's just like they go, how's it going? And I go, huh? And they go, how's it going? Huh? How's it going? Huh? And then they give up. And we're all happy. And we all know. You can use it in the hairdressers as well. It's the same.
And on they chat.
When we go on the 8th of August, there'll be the Bay City Roller Stakes.
A bit like Shea Byrne and Des Cahill on Rising Time, who sounded like two owl lads sitting in the corner discussing a band from their youth.
The Bay City Rollers.
What age are they now?
I don't mean your competition winners, obviously.
Well, they probably have a similar age. Les McKellen must be in his late 60s, early 70s, even older. Depends. I think, I'm not sure how many of the original lineup were there. I know it's one.
They were the One Direction of their day.
And they'll be in the parade ring for the Bay City Rollers race. And we'll go and meet them in the parade ring.
But they're not going to be led around, you know, with, on a lead or anything, are they?
No, wheeled around. There we go. 17.
Danny Elfman's number 2, huh?
You're all give a little love. There we go. We played it the other day. See, it's all for you, Des. It's all about you.
What are their other hits?
Shang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have a list of them.
No, let me think of them, actually.
Oh, I think that's called...
It's called what?
Dead Air.
Yeah. No, they were so big at the time. They were so big for a summer.
Why? Because I'm there to be alone.
Back on 2FM, and Sharon still hadn't got to the breaking news because they were now onto the joys of having chatty husbands who would do socialising for you.
Your husband is so different to you because he's so nice and lovely and like Leo, and all they talk to everybody.
Down. Yeah, I know. I suppose opposites attract. I don't know. But it's kind of good to have somebody that you can sort of, you know...
Send off to do that. When I go on holiday, I send Marin the pool.
Yeah.
Because I don't like talking to people either.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially when I'm on holiday and I've used up all my words at work.
Oh, absolutely.
So he kind of speaks, he goes around and introduces himself and talks to everybody around the pool.
And then it's done, you see. It's perfect. And that's the beauty of being in a relationship. That's one of the best things about being in a relationship. It's one of the perks is that, like, when one of the couple has spoken to somebody, it like counts. As the two of you, do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So we can go places now and be like, nobody would say, oh, well, Sharon was, you know, didn't make herself known. It's like, as long as Danny has done it. Like,
make him do
then
all
like
the
Danny
work.
Danny and Sharon has done it. Yeah, yeah.
He does all the work for you. Okay, so you pretend you're deaf.
Yeah. Well, back on Radio 1, things were getting serious.
In 1975. Well,
the 7 o'clock news was coming up and then Morning Ireland, and Des Cahill still wasn't showing any signs of ending the discussion about the Bay City Rollers.
So 75, 76, kind of 74 to 76.
Yeah.
That's gas. Anyway, they were so big at the time.
They're extraordinarily big.
They're massive, bleeding massive.
I just need to get on with this program.
All right, sorry. I'm going to sit here and just think about them for a while. All right. Bye-bye. It's reminding me of people, actually.
Let's find out more tomorrow with Des Cahill with the Bay City Rollers correspondent.
Des and Shay from Rising Time. And this is from Radio Na Gaeltacht. Si, 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 do, la, da, ya, ku, si, ni, la, du, ba, na, ha. It's from the Democratic Republic of Congo and is a song about a banana with a red hat. Children from Sculveen, Tinadé and Ardra, County Donegal on the Borsh Gaeltacht programme on Radio Na Gaeltacht. The song is called CCC and is from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And of course, that country is in the news these days because of the latest outbreak of the Ebola virus. On Morning Ireland, Dimitri O'Donnell travelled there with UNICEF to report from a treatment centre.
At the isolation unit, we meet a Congolese doctor who's covered from head to toe in a bright blue medical protection suit. He has to crawl inside a plastic cube, roughly the size of a small bathroom. The doctor carries out his tests safely outside the plastic cube. It serves as a protective barrier between the doctor and the patient.
How old is the baby?
11
days. Oh, 11 days.
At a nearby creche, a group of female Ebola survivors are caring for babies whose mothers have contracted the virus. Ebola survivors are immune from further infection. Forty-year-old Namisa sings one of her favourite lullabies as she cradles a newborn.
This baby is mine now. When her mommy feels better, she will take her back. But for now, she is mine. I don't like to hear her cry. I always put her in my arm to cuddle her.
Back at the Ebola treatment center, a large group has gathered to say goodbye to a cured patient. 8-year-old Prince Burundo spent a month in the isolation unit. His recovery is something worth celebrating. Tomorrow, someone else will take his place as this dangerous and complex health crisis in the DRC continues to spread.
Dimitri O'Donnell reporting from the Democratic Republic of Congo on Morning Ireland.
Among the government's plans is an increase in fuel tax to bring diesel in line with petrol.
The biggest news story this week in terms of global impact and long-term effects was, of course, the government's climate change plan.
Well, I think that it's finally recognising the scale of the challenge. And
on Drive Time, the discussion of the plan veered between science and hearsay. Cara Augustenborg, a scientist in UCD, had spent a couple of hours going through the plan.
So in that sense, it is ambitious in the way that it needs to be to address climate change. And also it's strong on some elements like financing and governance. So it shows a lot of potential.
Then Michael Fitzmaurice, independent TD for Roscommon Galway, said what he thought was really behind the government's climate change plan.
And bear in mind, Katie, that there is talk behind the scenes. There is talk that it would be mandatory to have X amount of forestry on each farm. And you will see farmers at the
where
moment...
Where is that talk, Michael?
We are hearing it behind the scenes when we talk to people in Dublin, that will come out later on.
You're saying in the Department of Agriculture?
We are hearing it from people above in Dublin constantly, that this will come out on the farming side of it. But bear in mind before that the farmers will be 13, 1400 in an ordinary family farm at a time that they are struggling to survive, driving people away from the farming sector. And on top of that, there is no word at all about the carbon credits out of this forestry that will be sown. The government appears to be taking that. So it is an attack, in my opinion, that 1.5 million people that live in rural Ireland will be paying the price in both the sequestration and the penalty because they don't have the infrastructure and transport, as again, the people that may have the choices of the Lewis or Dublin bus in their areas. So I think it's a savage attack, I would call it, on rural Ireland.
From Drive Time on Monday, and on the same programme on Thursday, Joseph O'Connor dealt with a parallel issue in his column.
You might think a bee is a tiny, insignificant thing, that if bees disappeared completely, everything would simply noodle along as normal. But life without bees would be bad as can be. Eleave you me, I'm luddy serious. Basically, bees are needed, as any otanist will tell you. Bees are small, but they're luddy important. Recently, with my children, Enjamin, Arbora and Ill, we went on a driving holiday around Ireland. Well, not a bee did we see between Ballyfermot and Oyle, County Roscommon, not from Elfast to Ballyporeen. I was telling them of my favourite aunt when I was a teenager, Ob Geldof and his Oomtown rats. Yes, long before Ono and U2 roke all records, Ob and the Oys had been ig. Forget Aeonce, I told them. Dad, they groaned, you're being luddy oaring, snowflakes.
Joseph O'Connor from Drive Time on Thursday. On Wednesday, Tracy Clifford on 2FM played something you'd expect to hear on Lyric FM. It's for a new 2FM public performance called Classical Collision, and it was the idea of classical concert pianist Moira Carroll who spoke to Tracy.
Someone like Mozart or Beethoven, like, they would have gone elsewhere for their inspiration. They would have looked at the music that was coming before them or the music that was being performed or composed at the time. And like, it's actually like not too far off that today. In many ways, obviously, so much has changed and obviously the style is so different, but actually like people are influenced by music constantly and by different styles, and like, it's a really great thing, and like, people are doing it and are doing it constantly, kind of merging and fusing and, you know, sampling and using other stuff. So I guess with this whole Classical Collision, it was like, well, why don't we do something really cool that way, and we can like merge them and see what it sounds like.
from the Tracy Clifford Show on 2FM. Also on 2FM, one of those quizzes you just get drawn into. It's called Five Words for a Fortune, or Five Words...
Five Words to a Fortune.
Sorry, yeah. And it's on The Breakfast Show with Dieran Garrahy and Eoin McDermott.
Okay, Eoin, you've heard Five Words to a Fortune. You know how it goes, correct?
Yeah.
The idea is this. One of the presenters goes out of the studio into a quiet room.
Okay. It's time for me to go outside.
Darren's gone. Get out, get out, get out, get out.
The other presenter reads a list of five words, and the contestant on the phone pairs five other words to that list.
Crab.
Claws.
Mouse.
Trap.
The other presenter then comes back into the studio and tries to guess what the five paired words were.
Rory.
McElroy.
However, here's the important thing. For every word the presenter gets right, the contestant Fire. Gets €5. But if they get all five words right, the contestant gets €5,000.
Dieran Garrahy, you're back in the room, please. I'm feeling good. No pressure, but loads of pressure. €5,000 worth of pressure. €5 for every correct match. Are you ready, Dieran?
Yes.
How did Dieran do? Find out after the break.
Playback on RTE Radio 1.
To recap, crab, claws, mouse, trap, Rory McIlroy, fire, engine, and car wash. Dieran Garrahy, you're back in the room, please. Crab.
Claws.
Mouse.
Trap.
Rory.
McIlroy.
Fire.
Engine.
We've never had this. This is Five Words to a Fortune. Four matches. The next word, if correctly matched, will win on you €5,000. Car.
Park.
Ah!
What?
Car wash.
No! 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 Who? Why? Not wash. Park.
Car park. Car keys.
One.
Car wash.
Yeah.
That one.
Are your nerves shot?
Yes.
My nerves are shot.
Ah! Anya, I'm sorry.
You may be sorry, Eoin, but you can bet the bosses in 2FM aren't. Now, there are some radio stations that have computers to pick their music.
This is Mystery Train. We're here until.
And then there's John Kelly on Lyric FM.
Oh, we've heard that one already. Hang on. Where is that? Oh, here it is. This is it. I know what I'm doing. Relax.
A computer might have an algorithm to choose each particular track based on what it thinks the audience wants to hear. John Kelly brings an altogether different sort of science to his show.
Sometimes when I'm putting the show together, you know, I just reach out blindly and grab something off the shelf and just see what it is. Might be something I haven't listened to in years and years and years and years. This is one case in point.
And then when he's chosen one track, how does he decide on the next one?
Pink India from Stephen Malkmus, from the album which is just called Stephen Malkmus from back in 2001. Well, it just so happened beside it on the shelf was Yola Tango.
John Kelly on Lyric FM, laconically enthusiastic. In fact, there was a parade of enthusiastic voices on the radio this week, almost all associated with music. They're the kinds of voices that even though they're on the radio, you know they're smiling. For example, David Hope. He was on Simply Folk, live from the Doolin Folk Festival, where he spoke to Ruth Smith. David's a musician who also organises one of the stages.
And tell us, this particular weekend, what's been your highlight?
I'll tell you after, if the stage is still there when I go back. There's some lively stuff on. I just left a bluegrass band from Alaska to get some hip-hop from Belfast going on the stage. So anything's possible.
Anything could happen.
That's been great. Yeah, loads of random music, but great music. It's been fantastic so far. Yeah.
So you fell into the music booking, but you yourself have had a career as a solo singer, songwriter, performer. Over the last 7 years, 10 years, you've had four records, is it?
Something like that, yeah. I can't remember. It's hard to know. They're all propping up beds around the house at home.
Good
but,
man.
I know they're still there, you know. I keep going back into the studio and making a few more, yeah, but sure. What else should I be doing at this stage?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
curse distance and rage against time. But one it'll pass and the other unwind, and there will be heard in the long lonely night. But that's worth having, it's worth having to fight. For what's to become on this day that is coming, when you go west as can be. Be safe, be strong, be brave and be true, and I'll be here waiting.
David Hope at the Doolin Folk Festival, as heard on Simply Folk on Radio 1. And then on The South Wind Blows from West Kerry, Philip King spoke to local choreographer Michael Keegan Dolan, who moved there from Longford.
The biggest difference between Longford and Kerry, the immediate difference that I experienced, was the gradient of the landscape. Like, it's very, very difficult to find a flat piece of ground here. So where I live up in the glens, if I want, like, if Milo, my son, kicks the football down the field, like, I literally, you know, it's an act of physical endurance to go get the ball back. Everywhere the water here is moving. You hear it like from my bedroom. You hear the rivers gurgling away, bubbling away, rushing down towards the Atlantic. Whereas in the Midlands, the lake sits still and they wait. Here you feel insignificant. When you look out at the west, the North Atlantic, or you look up at, you know, Canuck Fanon, you feel like you don't matter. And that sounds awful, doesn't it? Like, but in truth, it's wonderful to feel like that. Because when you start to feel like that, you start to connect with other things that are beyond you, you know, within you and beyond you.
Michael Keegan Dolan on The South Wind Blows. And some of that slow water appeared on Mooney Goes Wild.
The river at this hour of the evening is lovely. It's flat, calm, and you've just got this little foam, like suds on the top of a wash basin, yeah, really, just drifting past.
Declan Murphy from Birdwatch Ireland took Terry Flanagan out looking at dippers.
Oh, there's the other one. There's the other one. That's, yeah, the female. And look, the two of them are together now. Oh, that's lovely. He's actually singing. The male is actually doing a display song to the female. Do you see the way the male is perched on the near rock and right, he was pointing his bill skyward?
Yes, yes.
And
that
was actually a display to the female. The female is the one slightly to the left. Yes, she's bobbing there on the rock in front of us. And
Declan Murphy being all enthusiastic about birds, which is fine. But then the programme decided to make us fall in love with flies. Aina Nilauna tried to do this, and have a listen to the sound effects they used.
2019 is the year of the fly, no less. This is the year set aside that we should learn more about flies. But actually, the public profile of flies is often that of dirty, disease-carrying, high-frequency, buzzing, egg-laying pests.
Then they spoke to a woman with one of the best job titles.
Erica McAllister, Senior Curator of Flies and Fleas at the Natural History Museum in London.
Whatever about flies, though, Aina had a challenge for Erica.
Can you tell me the justification for the existence of blue bottles? Everybody hates them.
OK, if we didn't have blue bottles, you'd be swimming around in a quagmire of faeces. We need them to get rid of the waste. We also need them to get rid of these decomposing bodies. Just think of the pestilence. If all these bodies were just lying around all over the place, I don't think that would be a particularly pleasant environment for most people. So they're working away to consume this mass to make everything nicer for us.
Erica McAllister from Mooney Goes Wild on Radio 1. This is Finian on 2XM.
Burning brighter than the lights on the avenue. Your sister told you to follow your heart. But that cocaine had you from the start.
Low, 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 baby, as I go. You bring me right back up with an even flow. Low, 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 baby, as I go. You bring me right back up with an even flow.
Even Flow by Finian, as heard on the 2XM Rocks programme on the digital station RTE 2XM. On the other digital station, Radio 1 Extra, they were talking about binoculars on the Titanic.
There's a very famous, horrible incident, which is, where were the binoculars?
This is The Innovation Show, a business programme presented by Aidan McCullen. His guest has written a business book. His guest this week has written a business book called The Titanic Syndrome, about why companies sink. Her name is Nadia Zhexembayeva. She takes lessons from the Titanic disaster.
At the time of a collision, there were two people responsible for spotting potential disruptions. They were sitting in a crow nest. It's a little open-air cubicle on top of a mast. And two people who were watching were not drunk, not irresponsible, any of the idea that they were not doing their job completely off. They were very fresh. They just started their two-hour shift. They were new. They were healthy. They were paying attention. The only thing they didn't have is binoculars. And it's hard to imagine a ship today in 2019 that doesn't have binoculars on board with all of our high tech. How come they didn't have it in 1912? Well, the binoculars were on board, but they were locked up. And the reasons why they were locked up is because the person who was in charge of binoculars was let go at the first stop of the ship. And he took away the keys with him. And nobody thought of a necessity to break the cupboard because it was not a safe. It was a simple cupboard. Nobody thought it was necessary. And every time I come into a company today and ask them, what are your binoculars? How do you spot in the trend? What is the mechanism by which you notice that something new is going on? The lack of binoculars is staggering. We are so detached from the sea in which we are navigating that it's no wonder that when the iceberg shows up, it's like a huge mystery to us.
Nadia Zhexembayeva from The Innovation Show with Aidan McCullen on Radio 1 Extra. And Business and Ideas made an appearance on The Culture File on Lyric FM, where Owen Nolan talked about the man who invented the disposable razor blade, as well as inventing some myths about himself.
Legend had it that as his 40th birthday approached, he was so desperate to invent something that would make money, he locked himself for 3 days in his small apartment, well stocked with food and paper and drawing materials, and kept himself awake with coffee, feverishly pursuing that elusive killer idea. After 3 days, he had nothing. He had failed. Defeated, he decided he should wash and shave, which was when he had his eureka moment, realizing that every morning, everywhere, men were frustrated by their blunt, cutthroat razors and having to sharpen them on a leather strop. Not much of that is true, of course, but there was one essential fact that guided Gillette. He had worked as a salesman for the Crown, Cork and Seal Company, which made bottle tops. His boss, knowing Gillette's desire to invent, advised him to invent something that people use every day and throw away. Gillette had a lot of other ideas and would go on to imagine an America where everyone lived in a single giant rectangular city called Metropolis, which would be electrically powered by Niagara Falls and have buildings made of porcelain, while all the needs of the citizens were met by one giant corporation of which everyone was an owner. But back to Gillette's drive to come up with an idea for something that people use every day, discard, and, here's the important bit, replace. That was essentially King Gillette's brief to himself. And when he hit upon the idea of developing the stamped razor blade that would have a short life, he knew he had an idea. Arguably, one of the best a man can get.
Owen Nolan on The Culture File on Lyric FM.
And I've called her
from Cayley House this week.
From that ivy crown tower of sweet Inishkara o'ershadows her grave. Now the home of my childhood to ruin has fallen, and the dear ones that blessed it shall guide me no more. And I gaze on it still, dearest visions recalling, though the long grass has grown on the step by the door. I will be with you soon with the shamrock above me,
Never more from my own native Cork I shall roam, till I'm laid in the grave with the dear ones that loved me. For in death they will welcome their wanderer home.
Emily Rooney singing Sweet Inish Cara from Cayley House, which this week came from Kilmovie, County Mayo. And that's almost it for this week. And thank you to those of you who wrote with suggestions to playback at rte.ie. Back on Friday with the podcast and on Saturday with the broadcast. Just before I go, something for you if you're trying to think of names for a new baby girl. This from Wednesday.
Now on RTE Radio 1 Extra and Longwave 252, time to head over to Met Erin for the RTE Weather and Sea Area Forecast with Joanne Blackburn. Jean Blackburn, apologies. Joan Blackburn, sorry, Joan.
No problem. Thanks, Jan, and good afternoon, everyone.
What a great recovery. Announcer Janny Lanagon on Radio 1 Extra at Wednesday lunchtime. Until next week, slán.
Playback on RTE Radio 1.